Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the side where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Ike Getlin for Manufacturing Monday from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Going to talk about trade policy, going to talk about some manufacturing things. How do we rebuild the infrastructure, the manufacturing infrastructure that made this country great? Also, Democratic Lieutenant Governor candidate Scott Conklin is going to be here talking about his run, and Dan Honorato, and what the future holds for the state as we move, what is it, a couple hours more than a week away before we start punching the ballots? And this, you know, they say it all the time. This is a milestone. This is going to be a moment in history where future generations look back and go, they either got it right or they went horribly, horribly wrong. And I'm saying, pretty simply, that if we end up with a Tea Party in our halls of power, if we end up with some of these characters in their costumes, some of these people who belong in a three-ring circus, not in the halls of power, if we end up with these folks, we're in for an entertaining couple of years, but a dangerous couple of years, because nothing good can come of it. Nothing good is going to come from people who despise government running it. Nothing has ever come good of it. Never. But I had an interesting conversation this afternoon. And it really made me stop and think. And maybe it's because I do look down the road and I do foresee negative consequences if we take the wrong path that makes me take pause. This conversation was about anger. And really just anger for anger's sake. People are just ticked off, and they want others to be as miserable as they are. And this person I was having the conversation with was saying, look, you know, Rick, people are just angry. Everything that they've been told since they were children has now fallen apart. They went to work every day. They did the right things. They struggled. They fought. They persevered through the tough times. And now it's gone. And now there's major trouble. And it was his position that the Tea Party is just a bunch of people who are frustrated and angry. And it's a bunch of this pent-up, frustrated white anger, if you will. A bunch of white guys who have never been able to express themselves now feel like they've been through therapy. Little psychotherapy, and now they're blubbering all over the place. You know, they're just letting it all out. And I can agree with that. And I've said that from the beginning, that this whole Tea Party thing, while I don't believe it's really a movement, I do believe it's something that the right has manipulated. I do believe it is something that the big donors and the deep pockets have taken over. While there was some grassroots activity, I think the majority of what we're seeing are the big money events. And, you know, I was telling this guy, I was, and, you know, it kind of, I was watching the a fundraiser from West Virginia where Mitch McConnell was the speaker. And they were raising money for the Republican candidates there on, it was on C-SPAN I was watching. And the Tea Party Express guy was giving a speech to tell you just how much they respected this guy. In the middle, right in the middle of his speech, somebody rolled out a cake and they sang happy birthday. Right dead smack in the middle of his speech. And he's just standing there like, what just happened to me? Here, I started off saying, yeah, we're taking things over and we're doing this. And they just walked out with a big cake. And in my conversation, we were talking about this. And I said, look, you know, there may be some anger and there should be an opportunity for people to then come together and organize and do the things that need to be done to have a real sustainable movement. And what we finally came to is the fact that most Americans are very simple. You know, we all want to think that we're number one. We raise the finger. Oh, we're number one. We're the champions. And in most cases, we're not only misguided, but flat out wrong. You know, you talk about healthcare. Oh, we've got the greatest healthcare system in the world. Yeah, if you can afford it. You know, we've got the best education in the world. No, we don't. We've got the best this or the best that. No. And what's sad is when I say that to people, when I question this we're number one thing, people label me as, well, you're unpatriotic, Rick. You don't love America. You're unpatriotic. And I say, no. I say we should make things better. In the areas that we're not number one, we should be striving for something better.
Yell at the top of your lungs!
Obama!
But look, at the end of this, whether you believe we're number one in every category or not, there's a lot of work to be done. And we have a huge, mountainous task ahead of us. We were left with a massive, massive budget deficit. It didn't matter who was president in 2009. We were going to be left with a $1.2 trillion budget shortfall if we did nothing. And the Republicans knew this. And right from the beginning, they started right from the beginning. This guy's going to fail. He's going to spend too much money. Right from the beginning, you heard it from the beginning. And they expect us not to understand that this was coming anyway. And over the weekend, I heard Pat Toomey say something that kind of caught me for a second. He was being asked about what kind of programs he would cut. Now understand, I think just about everybody agrees we can bicker about discretionary spending, and it's not going to amount to a hill of beans. The three areas of spending in this country are military, Social Security, and Medicare. That's it. That's where the spending's at. That's where the mass of the spending's at. But Toomey's idea was, well, what we need to do is, here's his quote. Quote, you know, we found 75 different programs between the Department of Education and the Department of State that will subsidize one form or another of overseas student travel and student education. That's the kind of waste and duplication we can rein in. So a couple of kids got to go overseas and become educated in a foreign country. My wife was one of those people. She spent some time in Toledo, Spain. I say Toledo, she says Toledo. But she got to study abroad. And the world opened up for her. The perspective of how the world is opened up for her. And you know the sad thing? The thing that really has caught my eye is that most of the people who are the flag wavers, are the number one guys, they're the people who have never been out of their own neighborhood, let alone out of their own city or state. These are folks who have no idea what's outside of their four walls. Me, I like to talk to people who travel abroad. I can't afford it. I wish I could. But I would love to see what the rest of the world is. I would love to see other cultures. And maybe, you know, maybe just pick and choose what's the best. But it's this kind of very simplistic, very me-oriented mentality that has given us this jingoistic, we're number one, when the reality is we're not. We're anything but number one in many areas. We're number one in locking people up. We're number one in executing people. We're number one. I don't know if those are good things. And the sad thing is we can't have honest, decent conversations. We can't talk about taxes. We can't talk about spending without someone going off the deep end and spewing their thoughtless, nonsensical, anti-tax rhetoric. I had this guy going, well, I'm tired of paying taxes. Me too. I'm tired of paying taxes. I hate paying taxes as much as anyone. But when a guy who tells me he's making 25 grand a year tells me he's paying 30% payroll tax, I know he's full of the brown ale right up to his eyeballs. And what's interesting to me is he buys into the Toomey rhetoric that, oh, we can cut taxes and we won't add to the deficit. And I think most people understand that you cut taxes, it's got to get paid from somewhere, right? Toomey says it's not clear. Well, it's not clear that tax cuts will add to the deficit. Well, what happened during the Bush years? The Center for American Progress estimates that the Bush tax cuts actually cost us more than $3 trillion over the next 10 years. That's what it's going to cost us. And extending it just for that top 2% that we're so enamored with, that 2% that we just fawn all over, that's going to cost us $830 billion for the top 2%. The wealthiest 2% who have walked off with the store. And we're talking about another $830 billion to stuff in their pocket? And here's the thing that gets me. There's really been no serious evidence. There's no research. There's no evidence that these tax cuts are paying for themselves. And there's no evidence that these tax cuts have created any jobs. You know, I remember George Bush, you know, saying, well, you know, these tax cuts, these great tax cuts of mine, they're going to create millions of new jobs, and we're going to have jobs galore.
A robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief. We will help create more than a million new jobs.
Well, that didn't happen, did it? No, it didn't happen. And look, if these tax cuts were the panacea, if they were the way to go, if they created jobs, would we not be just at full employment? Would we be in this mess right now? No. But it doesn't work that way. The Bush tax cuts gave away the baby and the bathwater, not to mention the tub, the washcloth, the soap and the towel too. All gone. Do you remember, like I do, when Alan Greenspan was worried that we were paying the debt off too fast? Do you remember that? We were worried that the wealthy in this country wouldn't have investment options. Do you remember that? Because I do. I remember Greenspan saying, gee, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. We pay this debt off too fast. We don't know how to act. And I see this, and I got to be honest, I am angry beyond belief because we had a balanced budget. We had a surplus. We had money in the bank. We had money that could have been used to stave off this depression right from the beginning. And we gave it away. We didn't invest it. We didn't say, you know what? The United States of America needs roads and bridges and schools. We didn't say any of that. We need high-speed rail. Didn't say any of that. It said, here's a couple of bucks for you down at the bottom. Go get drunk so you're not paying attention to what we're really giving away. So all of us got a couple of shackles, a couple of bucks in our pocket, went and bought our Ripple or whatever we did. And the very wealthy, well, they walked away with wheelbarrows full of cash. And I don't know if you saw this on 60 Minutes on Sunday night. And let's take a break right here. I want to talk about this 60 Minutes thing because, you know, finally, I've been watching 60 Minutes for years, and finally I think they hit something that should be mandatory viewing for every working person in this country right now. Mandatory viewing. We're going to come back and talk about that. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. 1.2 million workers are looking at a new year without jobless benefits if Congress fails to act on federal emergency extensions before November 30th. That comes from a new report by the National Employment Law Project released on Friday. 387,000 workers are the newly laid off, workers who are only receiving the 26 weeks of regular state benefits. The rate of jobs has increased very little this year, with only one job available for every five unemployed worker. According to the unemployment report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics on Friday, 11 states are now in the double digits, with Nevada claiming the unfortunate title of highest unemployed rate. Nevada currently has a rate of 14.4%, topping Michigan, which held the distinction for 4 years, until May of this year. What's the best tonic for our still ailing economy? More stimulus or fiscal austerity? Doug Cunningham takes a look.
With millions of unemployed American workers still desperate for work, many economists are urging more economic stimulus to get people back to work. But economic austerity is a course that's also being proposed by some economists as well. Austerity would cut government spending and put a financial squeeze on workers. The theory is that by cutting the deficit, interest rates would be lowered, and that would stimulate growth. So which is the right answer for the U.S. economy? A new report from the Center for Economic and Policy Research, called The Myth of Expansionary Fiscal Austerity, says that austerity is not the right approach for current economic conditions in the U.S. The center says austerity would lead to further economic contraction and not the growth that we all need.
French workers are on the verge of seeing the country's retirement age increase from 60 to 62 and the full state pension from 65 to 67. Months of strikes and protests have been held as a result of French President Nicolas Sarkozy's plan, which he says is necessary for deficit reduction. The last hurdle for the legislation was clearing the Senate, which it did on Friday by a 177 to 153 vote. The AFL-CIO says its political program is getting some traction among union households, boosting the pro-Democrat vote. The Labor Federation has placed nearly 27 million election phone calls, knocked on 1.3 million doors, sent over 18 million pieces of direct mail, and distributed 17.5 million flyers. AFL-CIO officers are traveling the country and get-out-the-vote efforts right up until the election on November 2nd. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Yep, that's what they've done. That's what the very wealthy in this country have been allowed to do. That's what the Bush administration basically said, here, go ahead, the bank vault is open. Take as much as you want. And they did. And now we're left with this massive hole. And what's amazing to me is every one of these debates that I'm watching, and I've watched a ton of them because this is my time. This is my time of the year to watch all these guys go after each other. Every Republican turns around and goes, well, you increased the debt. And I'm waiting for one Democrat to go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't know who you're pointing at, but the debt was almost $11 trillion when Barack Obama took office. And there was a projected $1.2 trillion deficit as he took office. So it wouldn't have mattered who the guy was. McCain could have been sitting in the office. We were going to be heading down the same path. And it shows how limited our understanding of yesterday was. Because we've already forgotten about the Bush wars. Most people have long forgotten. In fact, the right-wing talk show hosts now are saying, oh, it's Obama's war. Obama's the one who, Richard Steele, Obama's the one who that's Obama's war. Or Michael Steele. Why do I keep saying Richard Steele? I think Richard Steele was a boxing referee, if I remember right. Jeez, I got to get that out of my head. But our quote of the day comes from Senate Minority Leader, and I hope he stays Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky. He says, the single most important thing we want to achieve is for President Obama to be a one-term senator. That has been their guiding principle from the beginning of the Obama administration. I'm sure you remember.
I hope he fails.
I'm sure you remember all of that. The Republicans from the beginning, they were out there saying,
I know what his plans are, as he has stated them. I don't want them to succeed.
And they did everything they could to stand in the way of that. In fact, and this is something that's, I think, very important. You go back to the Recovery Act that they passed, and you think about all the money that has been spent helping those who were affected by the Bush recession, all the people who lost their jobs in September of 2008. Now, remember, September of 2008 was a miserable time. Hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs. And in the aftermath, we saw massive 700,000 people per month losing their jobs. Even before the recovery was even finished, we were losing millions of jobs. So now I see this thing on 60 Minutes last night, and they had a couple of people. This guy, Scott Pelley, I think his name is, he went to Silicon Valley. And he wasn't looking at, you know, construction workers. He wasn't looking at, you know, people who were swinging a hammer for a living or you know, doing cash register work. He went after the executive class. He went after the people who, like the one guy, was a senior such and such of some company making big, big bucks, lives in a big, huge, beautiful house, talked about the fact that he had money for college for the kids, money in their savings, all kinds, all this stuff. And in 2008, when he lost his job, he thought, man, a couple months, I'll find the right fit for me. Well, here he is more than 2 years later. No right fit. He had to take the last dime out of his 401k to buy some kind of a duct cleaning business. And he's saying that, you know, he said that isn't even working because people don't have the disposable money to even have that done. So here was a guy who was, you know, being entrepreneurial. I'm going to pull myself up and I'm going to, you know, go and fight out there. She's not there. And the stories of the people that he talked to were amazing to me. Because, you know, when you think of unemployed, when you think of the unemployed, you think of a factory worker, you think of somebody who, you know, not your most educated, you know, high school education, maybe a little job training, but for the most part, not people with master's degrees, not people with PhDs, but there they were. He went to a church where they have this, you know, kind of a group, like a group self-help thing. And he asked the people with PhDs to raise their hand. And there were three or four of them in the room. He asked the people with master's degrees to raise their hands. Half the people raised their hands. He asked the people with bachelor's degrees to raise their hands, and 90-some percent of them raised their hands. This unemployment crisis that we're having right now, this is not a few unskilled laborers who've lost their jobs. This is every segment of the population. And what I say to them, because I think this is direly important, this November 2nd, when you go to the polls, and I hope you do, remember who tried to help you through. Remember who passed unemployment extensions so that you didn't lose your house and you could maybe feed your kids every once in a while. Because the Republicans were against that from the very beginning. And people like Pat Toomey, understand, people like Pat Toomey wanted a harder down. They wanted that safety net removed. They wanted you free-falling, and wherever you landed, and however hard it was, that's okay by them. Understand that. Because I think there's a massive disconnect in this country between what actually happened and what the Republicans were calling for. And thank God we didn't have them in power. Thank God Bush and his cronies were not in power in 2009. Because our economy would have completely stopped. We would have more foreclosures. We would have more crisis. We would have more pain. And that's not just me saying that. That's a number of very reputable economists who are saying, look, you need to have these safety net programs in place. You need to be able to stimulate an economy when it's falling. You need to be able to, as Keynes said, prime the pump to get them moving again. And we did that. And we stopped the massive job losses, and the economy is slowly turning around. The problem is the mainstream media wants to paint this in a way that, well, that wasn't fast enough. It's not good enough. And the banksters and in the big industry, they say, well, here's an opportunity for us to take complete control. And I look back at these people that this Scott Pelley interviewed. One woman who, she's living in the attic of a friend's friend, living in this little tiny crawl space because she lost her $70,000 a year job, lost her house, lost everything. She got a handful of possessions left. And when the guy asked her, he said, do you ever think you'll go back to the life you once had? She said, never. I'm never getting back there. My life now is what it is. And she was happy from going from 70 grand a year, happy to get a $9 an hour job. There was another guy he talked to, was some kind of an engineer of some sort. Took a job at Target because you need to pay the bills. And there was the one woman who was picking bottles out of dumpsters. Picking bottles out of dumpsters. And she took the cans and everything to the recycling center, and they gave her $28. And the guy who was doing the interview said, did you ever imagine $28 would mean so much to you? And she replied, I never thought $5 would mean that much to me. And this, I got to tell you, there's an opportunity here. Because there is a class war going on in this country. The very wealthy are winning this class war. And I know, I have had people tell me this a number of times. Oh, you're just trying to stir things up. We're a classless society, Rick. Didn't you know that? No, we're not a classless society. There are those who have, and then there are the rest of us. And it's only a matter of time before the rest of us join the stories of these people who are on 60 Minutes. So all we hear now are people saying, well, you know, we got to do something about the debt. Got to do something about the deficits. Got to do something about the debt. And I agree. You have to do something about the deficit. But right now is not the time. Right now is not the time. What we need to do is we need to give smart tax cuts to the people who spend every penny that they earn. And those are the bottom 90% of the people in this country. They need the tax cuts. They need the money in their pocket to pay the bills. And we must keep those tax cuts in place. But we also must increase spending. And I know that's not popular, but it is what it is. If nobody else is spending, if these businesses do not have customers, they can't keep their employees. We need to raise output so that unemployment comes down, so that these businesses go, you know what? I've got demand. I've got customers. We need to produce products so I can make a profit. That's how they build an economy. And look, I don't want to see massive tax increases on people. I know that's not the way to go. And I sure don't want to see spending cuts, because that will have the opposite effect. I mean, if you stop and you think just the basics of macroeconomics, the basics of public-private sector models, when times are bad, government has to act. When times are bad, government has to step in and fill that void. And that's what they did. And I'm telling you, the Democrats should stand up and say, yep, that's what we did. We may have structured it a little wrong because we were trying to engage the Republicans, but we stand by it. And I think had they done that from the beginning, I think they'd be much better off. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Michael Duke is the big Wally of Walmart. As CEO of the low-wage behemoth, he siphons some $19 million a year in personal pay from the global retailer. How much is $19 million? Let's break it down in terms that Duke's own workforce can appreciate. While big Wally's workers average about $9.50 an hour, Duke's pay comes out to $9,500 an hour. So he pockets as much in 2 hours as Walmart workers make in a whole year. But Walmart doesn't give a damn about such gross pay gaps between privileged elites and the rest of us. As a spokesman scoffed, I don't think Mike Duke needs me to defend his compensation package. Really? If not you, who? Those who think that the hoi polloi don't notice, much less care, about America's growing income disparity should take a peek at a recent opinion survey run by the right-wing corporate-funded Peter Peterson Foundation. This outfit intended to show that the general public backs the teabag agenda of slashing government spending, including balancing the federal budget by putting Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block. But whoopsie-daisy, the survey of thousands of Americans went badly wrong for the Peterson ideologues. For example, far from wanting to gut Social Security payments, 85% of the people favored extending the program by making the rich pay into the fund, like all the rest of us do. And, hey, Mike, this one's for you. Nearly 6 out of 10 of the folks involved in the Foundation's America Speaks survey want a new, higher tax bracket to make millionaires pay their fair share of providing for the common good. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Foundation tried to bury these surprisingly progressive results, but you can see a good analysis of them at the Center for Economic Policy and Research at cepr.net.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the wilted lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time.
Well, you know, if only we had those unemployment lines, you know, because it's interesting. And I got to be honest, I was quite interested in the fact that there are churches who are saying unemployed come to our churches. And, you know, initially I'm like, well, you know, they're looking for a new flock, a new customer to their churches, if you will. But there's an excellent opportunity for some organizing there. Because there's no other place where the unemployed can come. And it acted as, you know, like a support group, if you will. Because, you know, having been unemployed at one point in my life, I remember, and it was, you know, it was back during H.W. Bush's tenure that I was unemployed for a considerable amount of time. And I remember going every day, every single day, going, opening the paper, saying, okay, what's here? What can I go down to the unemployment office? Hey, are there any jobs today? Going down to the different union halls. There was just nothing then. And I remember there being 10, 15 people showing up for one job. I remember how hard it was. And I remember the despair and the anger and the frustration. And that's what folks, I can't imagine. Honestly and truthfully, I cannot imagine what 2 years, 99 weeks of unemployment. I cannot imagine what that's like. Not knowing from day to day if you're going to be able to find a job. And not having health care. I mean, stop and think about it. There's more to this unemployment story than just not making the same money you were making. Not only are you making 40% less than you were making working, you have no health care. You have no pension. There's no future there. You know you're just wasting time. And you know that as every day goes by, that means down the road it's going to be that much harder to find a job. I remember after 3 months completely freaking out, going, nobody's going to hire me now. Because I've been out of the job market for 3 months, and nobody will hire me. And I remember thinking, you know, if I were the employer, if I was sitting across the desk, I'd think, well, you know, what's this bum been doing for 3 months? And that's the mentality that it's the mentality that I was raised with, and I think most Americans were raised with the same work ethic, that you got to get up and you've got to do something productive every single day. You've got to get up and you've got to go to work. You've got to support yourself. You've got to support your family. And when you're in a position where, for no fault of your own, you didn't get fired. Boss just said, no more work for you. Don't come back. You didn't do anything wrong. There's just nothing left. The economy collapsed. All of the things that they told us, all of this free trade, all of this deregulation, all of this business first, foremost, and last, all of this stuff to, hey, you know, let's give the wealthy everything. This trickle-down economics, all this stuff. Hey, they're going to give you a job. They're going to give you the job. We're going to give them all the money, and it's just going to rain down. The prosperity will rain down on you. I've been trickled on enough, I got to tell you. And over 30 years, I've seen a complete stagnation of wages. Over 30 years, I've seen the destruction of the working class that I'm now calling the desperation class. And you don't hear this in the mainstream media, which is why I give 60 Minutes so much credit for coming out and saying, you know what? These are the faces. These are the people who are out there. You know, because it's easy. It's easy to say, well, you know, unemployment compensation costs us X amount of dollars. We can cut it by 20% and it'll save us a bunch of money. That's easy to say, no problem. The Pat Toomeys of the world, the Tom Corbetts of the world, no problem to them. Because it's not them. It's not their family. And what frustrates me about this whole scenario is there are working people. We're siding with them. You know, I've heard people say, you know, well, you know, Rick, you know, there are jobs out there. They could go work for minimum wage. Is that what we want? Do you think that's going to help the economy? I don't. I think it actually hurts the economy because it drags us all down with it. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Spike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Spike?
Well, as being one of the uncounted part of the unemployment population in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I guess as good as can be. You know, it's funny that the story last night, it kind of just glazed over the fact, though, about, you know, we count our unemployment as the number of people collecting, and, you know, they're talking about the ones right at the end, 2 years, which, worst of all, that's essentially what they're trying to almost dump me on, even though I worked in segments of that time for the census. I'm in an appeal right now because they won't count the second quarter of this year for me, which I worked a ton.
Which is another reason we need unemployment compensation reform in this state, and there are several representatives. Mark Gergely, one of the state reps, is working on that to get the latest income data used instead of the old-fashioned way a year in the past. There is some work being done on that.
Yeah, but in the same, the GOP in Pennsylvania, with two campaigns in particular, have been really just waging a public war against those of us who work for a living, and especially those of us who work for a living and are out of work. Obviously, we all know Corbett's accidental little faux pas, slipping what he really thinks callously about unemployed people. And in the same way, Pat Toomey, that, you know, heavily funded by the U.S. Chamber of Congress, Club for Growth, these far right-wing, ultra-wealthy individuals who say crazy things like, you know, oh, that Joe Sisnak, he's so liberal, he supports card check, a backdoor way of letting unions into the workplace. And it's like, think about how bad we've been getting it where the sun doesn't shine without the union, you know?
Well, I mean, listen to Toomey himself. Toomey's father was a union member, which just blows my mind that the son of a union member is one of the people who is out there on the forefront trying to destroy it. Makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, exactly. He's let the wealth and the crazy Christian fundamentalists he's been rubbing elbows with wear off on him. And I might add, too, by the way, some of these parts of this country have been hardest hit because so many of the more white-collar jobs have been lost are some of the most very conservative areas who are still voting Republican and essentially kicking themselves in their own rear end.
You figure that out. You know, and going back to the piece with 60 Minutes, they did bring up the fact that the unemployment rate is just those collecting. I think the number he gave nationwide was 17% of the population is either unemployed or underemployed. And in California, where he was, I think he said it was 22%.
Yep, 22%.
Which is just mind-boggling.
I think it's worse here in Pennsylvania, personally. I mean, the census, when we worked the census in Pennsylvania, we had some really ridiculously heavily qualified people for better jobs and really smart people working the census, which in an up economy might be a good chance for people of lower education to make good money. This time around, the people who ran large businesses at one point or, you know, very intelligent individuals, some who work in the science industry, doing the census, which is kind of almost like being a mailman in many ways. Only people like the mailman a little more.
Only temporary.
Yeah, only temporarily. But, you know, I mean, and one guy I worked with, he eventually found a job with the segment of the census that works year-round. But when he was with the census, he interviewed at one point to be the manager of a new convenience shop. And they told him they weren't going to hire him because he was too qualified, and they know that as soon as something better paying came along, he'd be gone.
Yeah, and that's the conversation I had this afternoon with somebody, with a friend of mine, saying, look, I mean, a lot of these people who were in that 60 Minutes piece, that guy who was the senior executive, you're not going to hire him to clean toilets or to wait tables. You're not going to invest time into him to train him at a low-skilled job when you know he's going to leave the second he has the opportunity. And that's really a lot of people that I've met.
Yeah, yeah, and if the most educated are struggling to find work, you know, how is this going to work out for the people with, you know, just high school diplomas or even people who are even community college or even four-year graduates of college?
Let me ask you this, Spike. You know, you look at these people who are extremely well-educated, who are extremely articulate. Why haven't we seen some kind of an uprising from these people saying, look, we're not just a bunch of dumb yokels who, you know, we're doing menial manual labor jobs. We're professional class. I'm still trying to grasp the fact that we haven't heard from these people who have been demonized by the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, some of them are, to use a phrase overused a bit, drinking the Kool-Aid of the right wing.
I
think there's a bit of shame as well among some people that they shouldn't be suddenly on the level of poverty. They were once well above it. And I'm sure it's a bit of a culture shock to go from living pretty comfortably to living day to day.
You know, it caught my eye last night when the executive guy who bought the ductwork truck, when his wife scoffed at the $475 a week that they were getting from unemployment. Like it was, that's nothing. It barely paid our health care.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Some health care plans are $350. Well, a long time ago, $350 a month. Now it could be probably more $500 to $800 a month.
Oh, I remember where I worked last year. they were asking for voluntary layoff, and our COBRA benefits were $1,108 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, COBRA is the most useless thing. I've never understood, if you're out of work, how can you afford COBRA? I mean, if you can afford COBRA, you don't need COBRA.
It's one of those things that they gave us where they think, oh, boy, we got something. And you go, wait a second. We didn't get anything. It's like the Family Medical Leave Act. Oh, boy, we got something. You go, it's unpaid? Oh, well, I can't afford that.
Yeah, close your eyes and you can see everything that you got in those deals.
Exactly.
Precisely.
Exactly.
You know, I just hope that the polls are correct and Mr. Sestec gaining momentum right when he needs it most, and the Admiral will take the win. I have a lot of faith in this county, he will. And I certainly hope that the Horn ad that was in our county journal that also plugged the show, hopefully some people that were there are listening to the show tonight. And, you know, let's especially hope Mr. Kanjorski, even with some of his flaws, can overcome Mr. Barletta, who's going to be just terrible.
Now, didn't you know Barletta's a consensus builder? That's what the headlines of the paper yesterday said. He's a consensus builder.
As long as the consensus is a lot of illiterate, uneducated, crazy people. I guess, yeah, he could be a consensus builder. But for those of us rational individuals who stay away from xenophobia and racism, he's a more polarizing individual.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent point, Spike. I appreciate the call, man.
Hey, thank you. I love the show.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right here. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Stick around.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury. Don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestec for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestec supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestec, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Come on, it's everything. November 2nd is about everything. And what frustrates me is you look at a lot of these midterm elections, and it comes down to one in five people bother to show up to vote. And you get one out of ten people deciding the direction of the country. I mean, stop and think about the numbers here. When you have such a small percentage of people who pay attention to the direction of their country, but everybody loves to complain. Can't spend 15 minutes to go cast your vote. Can't spend a couple of minutes every day to actually educate yourself. And for those people who, they look to their local newspaper for endorsements, today was a big day for the Sestak people and for the Honorado people, because some really big endorsements came out. The Patriot News, right here in Harrisburg, historically a very right-wing kind of, a very conservative type paper, came out and supported not only Joe Sestak, but also Dan Honorado, which I find really interesting, because I think even they're afraid of Tom Corbett. You know, as far off to the right as this paper is, they're even afraid of how bad Corbett will be. Some other endorsements for Sestak came from the Wilkes-Barre Leader Times, or Times Leaders, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and the Post-Gazette, who said he's the voice of reason in a season of anger. And you look at Honorado, a bunch of really good endorsements as well. The Scranton Tribune, the Philadelphia Inquirer, who said he has the skills. The Philadelphia Daily News, the Easton Express Times, the Sunday Tri-County Times, Courier Express, a number of really solid endorsements. And I'm hoping that people who read these newspapers go, you know what? We're going to vote along the lines of the editorial boards. And the biggest endorsement of all came from former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum. Yep, Santorum had the biggest endorsement. He didn't actually come out and endorse anyone, but I think his actions speak louder than words. The Hotline writes, Rick Santorum, Pennsylvania Republican, is putting all his presidential eggs into the Iowa basket. His decision this week to join a three-day, 1,300-mile bus tour through 45 Iowa counties calling for the removal of three Iowa Supreme Court justices who helped legalize gay marriage is a shrewd political maneuver that will grant him priceless exposure to the state's grassroots conservative groups. It also confirms Santorum's strategy of approaching Iowa as an all-or-nothing gambit. So basically he's decided, and I think it's interesting, he's decided that, you know what, I'm not gonna do anything for Toomey. I'm not even going to be in the state. Not even going to be in this time zone. because he never did give his endorsement. He did, half-heartedly say, well, Pat Toomey's the right guy for the forever. But he never gave the endorsement, which I find pretty interesting. Because you would think that if Toomey does win, stop and think about this for a second, on the off chance that Toomey does win and becomes a United States Senator, Santorum, who wants to be president, would want to be able to reach back to Mr. Club for Growth, to the Mr. Chamber of Commerce, and maybe tap into some of that money that Toomey's favored with. I mean, stop and think about this. The last reporting, Toomey raised $13 million. That's nothing. That's not even saying what's been the last month. So how much money is going to be spent here in the next couple of days? I have no idea. I've seen there was $1 million last week spent by Club for Growth, and above and beyond the couple of million they spent earlier. And now this week, I guess they've committed another $400,000 in television ads. They are just bombarding the airwaves. Because the very wealthy, they understand. They understand now is their time. Now is the time to put down all of that 20th century, that's so yesterday, worker uprising, where people said, you know what, we'd like to have a minimum wage, and we would like to have, health benefits, if you don't mind so much. If you wouldn't mind, maybe a little pension for when we get older or something, something small. We're not asking much. Because the working class in this country has never asked for too much, which I find hysterical when you read some of these job posts where they talk about a factory's closing and you get some nitwit who goes on, well, you know, what do these uneducated people think that they can make $30 an hour while a professional like me only makes 25? And you said we didn't have a class war. We're eating each other. I mean, I remember a supervisor that I had once, college educated, didn't know that I have a college degree. He didn't know and probably didn't care. But he loved to point out the fact that I made more than he did. And that used to anger him to no end. He'd get so frustrated, and I would just show him my paycheck. And I said, you know what? You can make this kind of money, too. And I'd hand him my contract book. I said, everybody here is making that much. Why don't you get a union? Management union. There's tons of them. Well, I'm better than that. Well, he was better than that when they walked him out of the place without any warning. But what's interesting to me is that we seem to think that we're better than somebody else. I've never begrudged anybody a living. I've always said, look, I'm not going to ever question how much you earn. If you're a working person, you know, you make $10, $20, $15, $20 an hour. That's not my concern. I want a strong working class. And if I'm not making that, I'm going to ask, how do I make that? You know, I remember when Harley was on strike a couple years ago. And I had callers call into the program going, well, you know, they make $18 an hour and I only make $8. They get health care and I have to pay for mine. And I said, you know, are you angry that they get it or you don't? Because if you're angry that they get it, I can't help you. But if you're angry that you don't, you can help yourself. You know, it's called collective bargaining. And I've always been amazed at working people who don't want to come together. You know, capitalists, they don't seem to mind pulling their resources and pulling their money to form a corporation. They don't mind doing that. Why is it that we in the working class, why is it that we who punch a clock and live on a paycheck, why is it that we don't want to pool our labor? I mean, that's our capital, right? It is what we have to sell in the marketplace. It makes very little sense to me that we would not want to get as much as we possibly could for our commodity. If you're going to talk in pure business terms, our commodity is our labor, our skill, our ability to perform a task. So what interests me is that somebody would be willing to do that labor for less than they could possibly get. Because you know the capitalists won't do that. They pull their money together. Why? To make more money. I mean, if you stop and you just think about it from a purely free market capitalist perspective, which, you know, all my free market friends, this is for you. If the people with money can pull their resources together, why can't the people pull their labor? Why can't I and my executive chef over here, why can't we pull our abilities together and demand a better wage? See, the capitalists don't want you to do that because they've got us where they want us. Divided and conquered. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Ike Getland from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. And again, you know, this being Manufacturing Monday, it's important to think about the direction of this country and the ability of people to bargain their labor. The ability of people to come together and demand, oh, I don't know, a living wage. Not a credit card, but a paycheck. To demand health care. Not a handout, something that you work for, something that is yours. And maybe some security in old age. I think that's reasonable. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. We're back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children. Even after they're born. Rick Smith. The
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. 1.2 million workers are looking at a new year without jobless benefits if Congress fails to act on federal emergency extensions before November 30th. That comes from a new report by the National Employment Law Project released on Friday. 387,000 workers are the newly laid off, workers who are only receiving the 26 weeks of regular state benefits. The rate of jobs has increased very little this year, with only one job available for every five unemployed worker. According to the unemployment report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics on Friday, 11 states are now in the double digits, with Nevada claiming the unfortunate title of highest unemployed rate. Nevada currently has a rate of 14.4%, topping Michigan, which held the distinction for 4 years, until May of this year. What's the best tonic for our still ailing economy? More stimulus or fiscal austerity? Doug Cunningham takes a look.
With millions of unemployed American workers still desperate for work, many economists are urging more economic stimulus to get people back to work. But economic austerity is a course that's also being proposed by some economists as well. Austerity would cut government spending and put a financial squeeze on workers. The theory is that by cutting the deficit, interest rates would be lowered, and that would stimulate growth. So which is the right answer for the U.S. economy? A new report from the Center for Economic and Policy Research, called The Myth of Expansionary Fiscal Austerity, says that austerity is not the right approach for current economic conditions in the U.S. The center says austerity would lead to further economic contraction and not the growth that we all need.
French workers are on the verge of seeing the country's retirement age increase from 60 to 62 and the full state pension from 65 to 67. Months of strikes and protests have been held as a result of French President Nicolas Sarkozy's plan, which he says is necessary for deficit reduction. The last hurdle for the legislation was clearing the Senate, which it did on Friday by a 177 to 153 vote. The AFL-CIO says its political program is getting some traction among union households, boosting the pro-Democrat vote. The Labor Federation has placed nearly 27 million election phone calls, knocked on 1.3 million doors, sent over 18 million pieces of direct mail, and distributed 17.5 million flyers. AFL-CIO officers are traveling the country and get-out-the-vote efforts right up until the election on November 2nd. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't have a phone? Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Nobody never got nothing that didn't raise a voice and push. Like the steel worker in Ohio, the miner in West Virginia, the teacher in Chicago, janitor in Mississippi. From the sweatshops of L.A. to the fields of Mission Flats, there's a thundercloud exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women standing up.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. This past weekend, I read a story that angered me, made me sad, frustrated, depressed, whatever words you want to use. The Ford plant in Cleveland, where they used to make the Cleveland engines, all gone. They're going to be closing their doors here in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, this is a place that at one time employed 10,000 people. They're now shedding their last 300. And one of the quotes that kind of caught my attention was a guy by the name of Danny Wade. He's a plant worker. Said, "We took raw materials, we took scrap iron and sand, and we made it into something, and we're losing that. And it's a sad thing." And I agree. So the question is, where do we go from here? That's why I've asked Ike Gitlin from the Alliance for American Manufacturing to come talk to us a little bit. Ike, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
You know, I look at this story. The Cleveland stamping plant, the Cleveland engine plant was one of the biggest companies in Cleveland. Most of my friends, their parents worked there. That was the way that you got out of the housing project that I grew up in. That's how you moved into the middle class, and now those jobs are gone, Ike.
Well, you know, it's like a lot of things. The incentives are there, you know, to close plants here. I don't know the specifics of the Ford plant. I did see a quick piece on it on the web, where it appears as though they were moving that production to more efficient places. But part of that has to do with the cost of retooling and rehabbing, you know, existing facilities. And part of that has to do with, you know, it's often cheaper to have somebody else do it as a subcontractor rather than continue to pay decent wages. One of the things that the steelworkers did back when we were talking about the auto bailout was to point out that there's somewhere in the order of 7.2 million additional jobs in the auto supply chain that are outside Detroit and outside of the actual assembly of automobiles. And those 7.2 million jobs are what we're talking about when you talk about an engine plant or you talk about a transmission plant or somebody makes glass or somebody makes carpet, you know, for the vehicles. And those plants are sliding away from us. One of our concerns in the GM restructuring plan was that they were going to get healthy by outsourcing. And that was something that we were very much against. And in the end, we were able to get them to idle some plants instead of completely tear them down, which allows you the opportunity to reopen them. But what really needs to happen is to change all the incentives and to make capital and credit available here in the United States to enhance the supply chain here instead of inducing outsourcing.
You know, we've been hearing a lot of that. I've been watching a lot of debates, especially the senatorial debates from around the country. And that's one of the things that the Republicans have been harping on. Well, you know, the credit's not there because business doesn't feel comfortable right now. But I got to be honest, I thought that was part of what the bank bailout was supposed to do, keep those credit lines open and allow companies to invest. It just doesn't seem that they're doing it.
They aren't. We're told that there's over $1 trillion sitting at the Fed right now because the banks get a guaranteed 10% on that money instead of putting it out to work in maybe what might be a little bit more risky, you know, a venture. I think, you know, one of the problems that manufacturing has is that it is riskier than other types of investment. And there's all kinds of inducements to put that money offshore, to just park it and not use it at all. And that's what we're calling for a look-see at. And that is, you know, why isn't that money being put to work? If in fact manufacturing is riskier, can the government do something in terms of low guarantees, investment banks, infrastructure banks, things that other nations do as part of a manufacturing strategy, to see to it that they have a healthy manufacturing sector. And so if you go to China, China's doing all kinds of things to induce manufacturing in China. If you go to India, India's doing all kinds of stuff in the same regard and also in their IT sector. And so it goes in Europe and other places. We're the only ones that aren't doing that. It's one of these cases where, you know, normal market forces end up leaving you behind, where other nations have developed strategies that thwart those market forces. And so the United States has to decide, you know, are we going to play the game the way everybody else is playing the game, or are we going to lose and be proud of the fact that we were somehow purist about a system that just is becoming rarer and rarer around the globe?
Right. You know, one of the things I've always said is what we should be doing is we should be buying stuff. I look at my school district here. They put up a solar array in my daughter's school that's going to pay benefits for years to come, and it was done with federal and state money. There was smart investment there. I say by instead of tax credits or loan guarantees, you create the demand that these businesses need, because they don't need tax cuts. They need demand. They need customers. And if we were to do that just here in the state of Pennsylvania, in every school district, there's 500 school districts here that you could put solar panels on all of the schools and save taxpayers money in the long run for not having to pay for electricity.
Yeah, you know, the thing I think that hasn't been discussed in the way it should be, and I think when you do talk to people, at least reasonable people, they understand the difference between a handout and an investment. And when you're talking about investing in a job and you're investing in a manufacturing facility that pays good wages, people understand that if you can get that done, that thing pays off over and over again over a number of years. If you give somebody a tax credit, it's gone. You know, it's used. I mean, I go in front of audiences all the time and say, hey, what'd you do with that tax credit you got out of the stimulus bill? They don't even remember getting it. you know, let alone, you know, what they did with it. And so that $300-$600 went somewhere. If it got spent at Walmart, it went overseas, because almost all their goods are coming in from overseas. And Walmart isn't the only one like that. So, you know, if you're going to make a targeted investment that pays back and builds the assets of the nation, which is really what you're talking about with your GDP is your assets of your country. You know, if you're going to rebuild the manufacturing sector, you get a payback out of that. And AAM has done some work and has a number of pretty good white papers on that that show that numerically exactly how that works out and how much more you get out of making those investments. But people aren't talking to the American public about that. You know, people aren't saying to you, hey, are you willing to spend a little money to invest in manufacturing if it, you know, does in fact, you know, bring a return. When you ask that question, which AAM has done, and did it, by the way, with both Republican pollsters and Democratic pollsters, so nobody could assail the results were very clear, and that is the American public is very interested in doing that.
Well, I think it's common sense. If you don't produce something, if you don't add value to raw materials, you're not going to be a first world country very long, because, to be honest, my definition of a third world country is you take your raw materials, you ship it out of the country, and have it returned to you as a value added product.
Well, what's happened is we've gotten into this kind of argument, public argument that the media has carried, where people are kind of berserk about the types of stimulus programs that have been done up to date and that kind of thing. In reality, they haven't been examined very well. If you take a look at the so-called auto bailout, the fact of the matter is that it's working very, very well. We saved the core of American manufacturing, because that's what the auto industry is, and people didn't lose their jobs and so forth. Other types of investments that were made in terms of tax credits and things like that and the stimulus haven't borne out so well, and people are angry about that. The money that was spent on Wall Street stabilized the economy for sure, but it hasn't produced a Wall Street that's woken up and taken on its responsibility to put money into our economy. So there has to be a deeper discussion about how does the government do an inducement of the economy that brings a long-term result. We get to that level. The level we're at now is we're just pissed off. And the longer we're just pissed off about how the thing has gone, the longer we're going to drift, and the longer we're not going to make the kind of investment that's going to allow us to play catch-up.
All right. I think it was Winston Churchill who said, you can count on Americans to always do the right thing after they've tried everything else.
Yeah. It's one of my international president, Leo Gerard's favorite quotes.
Because you can.
I don't think Winston was drunk when he said that.
I hope not. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Getlin. He's from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is the website. Check it out there. There's a link on our site as well. You know, you brought up China and you brought up some of the discussion about the stimulus. Interesting is most of my friends are angry that we spent money on, let's say, cash for clunkers, for instance. And they think that all it did was stimulate the economies of Japan and China and Germany. And I try to remind them that if you remember, there was a certain party that was against any type of Buy American provisions or any type of things that would force people to buy products from the U.S. I think people forget that.
Well, I think we're in some sort of a new phase where we just throw away the facts if they don't suit what we'd like to think is happening. And this is a case of that. The facts, when you look at it, and there's been a report issued by the government on the result of Cash for Clunkers, extremely successful program, as it was in the other countries that we copied it from. It, in fact, restored the American auto industry at a time when sales were almost, non-existent. There were all kinds of predictions that it wouldn't do anything for the American car. That's not true. Turned out to be a tremendous boost. They're paying back their longer rate and coming around. And you've got healthy companies that are pursuing new models and new designs, and it's a very good story. But people don't want to hear that story that we're against it. And the airways are flooded with all kinds of nonsense about, you know, how that Cash for Clunkers program was a failure, because it was a government program. It had to be a failure, right?
Right.
But it wasn't. It was a success. Tremendous parts of the stimulus were a success. Part of the problem that you've got here is that people haven't seen the disaster that would have been had we not done what we did. And the situation is that without Cash Clunkers, we would have had a disaster in the auto industry. We didn't see that because we did smart and saved, you know, a good of the auto industry and turned it around and gave it some cash and gave it the ability to move cars. People said, well, all it's going to do is people that are thinking about buying cars anyway are going to all buy their cars, and then nobody's going to buy cars after that. And all you've done is incentivized, you know, a delay in the destruction of the industry. That didn't happen either. people, you know, there has not been a slump in car sales. And, in fact, you know, once that kick, the cash for Conkers kick happened, in fact, it continued. So every single prediction on cash for clunkers was wrong. All the predictions of what it would do were right. And those people that don't want to catch up with the truth simply have to ask themselves the question, you know, are they in it for the truth or are they in it for egotism?
Well, I think they're in it for ideology.
Yeah.
They were against it before out. So you knew where they were going to go when it was finished.
Well, there wasn't a single congressman that I know of that didn't cut a ribbon or spend some of that stimulus money in their districts while they were decrying the federal government doing it. So there's a certain amount of hypocrisy running around, too.
Yeah. Let's talk. Last thing I want to talk about is China. You almost can't talk about manufacturing in this country without talking about the fact that the way I believe it is we've given our manufacturing a base away. It's not that they've taken it. It's that we've given it away. And at this point, I wonder is it too late to regain the prowess that we once had? 110 years, world's leader in value-added manufacturing. Now looks like this year may go away. What do we do with this?
Well, it's never too late, and it's not too late now. We're getting a hell of a wake-up call, and I think we ought to heed it. You know, you can't be angry at the Chinese. The Chinese, you know, are a evil system, essentially trying to modernize their country, doing it with an authoritarian government, and a bunch of corporations come over and said, hey, us, and we'll just rocket you into the 21st century. And so, you know, you had a group of politicians within the Chinese, you know, authority there that hooked up with a bunch of capitalists from the United States and around the world, and they started sending money there. And they arranged an incentive system on investment to make that more lucrative than investing in the United States. So what you have to do is you got to turn that back around. You got to incentivize the other direction, and you've got to close. Congress tried to do that right before they recessed, tried to pass a measure that would make it more lucrative to invest in the United States than it would overseas, and a certain party, as you put it, blocked that and didn't let that happen. You know, we're going to have to wake up on that one, too. But, no, it's not too late. The American public is very much in support of it. It can be done. It's being done to a certain extent against all odds. You know, if you take a look at the fact that the China came into the World Trading Organization, the WTO, in 2001, and all this has happened over that short 5-7 year period of time, you certainly can reverse, you know, that kind of trend.
Yeah, because what I find amazing is we read reports that the companies in China retro-engineer products. They don't the country doesn't usually honor patents or licensing, and you companies who are willing to go over there and risk that kind of a scenario where they could lose everything for a short-term gain. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, you find a lot of American companies at this point sort of being forced to play the game, and that's because the incentives aren't allowing them to play the game any other way. So, you know, if we wanted to protect patents, we can protect patents. If we wanted to hold them accountable, we can hold them accountable. The Obama administration, to his credit, is the first administration in probably 30, 40 years actually has enforced our trade agreements. And there's just a paper case today, and they went to the BT stuff that China was doing to violate its agreements. These things can happen. You know, all you got to do is decide you want to do it. People don't give the Obama administration credit for throwing away all the naysayers that said, you know, if you took on China, you'd have a trade war. We don't have a trade war. Well, we've gone back in the United States under an appropriate trade regimen. I think it's people waking up, thinking a little more about these issues, digging into them a little more. There's a tremendous amount of money being put into convincing the American people that the facts aren't the facts. So we've got to see past literally billions and trillions of dollars in that's just false advertising. And we've got to kick our politicians in the ass a little bit where they wander away from us and get all tied up in a lot of nonsense. So a lot of work to be done.
And that's where I think November, after November 2nd, we'll figure out a lot more.
Well, you know, we've been fighting this fight for 20, 25 years. November 2nd is certainly going to be a milestone and very important for people to make sure the right people with their heads on straight are in Washington. But I wouldn't have anybody believe that no matter what happens on November 2nd, that this fight isn't going to be a very difficult fight. There's tons of money involved. There's tons of powerful people and powerful interests. If you're going to get something good, you know, it's going to take a fight. That's what my dad always said anyway.
Yeah, it's going to take boots on the ground. Ike, I appreciate appreciate your time. Getlin from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org is their web. I can appreciate it.
Okay, have a good day. Thanks for having us on.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break right here, right back after this.
I'll never turn. I'll never bend. I'm with you now.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me, gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say, revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
You know when the revolution starts? It shouldn't be in the working class against the working class, as the investors are going to try and do. Working people against the machine who put us in this position of fighting workers in other countries. You know, I have nothing against the Chinese workers. I have nothing against the Indian workers. I have nothing against any of them. With the people who've pitted us against each other. I have a problem with the people who have exploited one area or other. I've got a problem with the, you know, I've said this 1,000 times on the program. I don't fear black people or yellow or red or whatever color you want to name. The guy that scares me is that white guy. The white guy who sits in that boardroom who, with the stroke of a pen, can change thousands of lives. One mark can irreparably change thousands of lives. And in the process, put a couple of bucks in his pocket. Remember back in 2003? When Microsoft billionaire Paul Allen constructed a massive yacht, 414-foot yacht. It was called the Octopus. It was the world's longest pleasure boat. And that couldn't stand for too long because the billionaire class, you know, the keeping up with the Buffets, if you will, one of the billionaires from the United Arab Emirates, Sheikh Mohammed Rashid Al Maktoum, say that 10 times fast. His big boat, the Duke, it ran 531 feet. Ha-ha! But that didn't stand for very long because the Russian billionaire, Roman Abramov, his boat, the Eclipse, was 533 feet. And I guess now maybe you can't get any bigger because Roman's boat now has state-of-the-art missile-grade defense systems, and an escape submarine. So I guess, you know, I was thinking about it during the break there. Maybe, you know, maybe if we do give the billionaire class, they'll buy little toys for themselves, like a 533-foot yacht, and that we can work on. So maybe I'm wrong here. What do you think? 1-888-520-745. If we give them all the money, will their big expensive toys, will that be enough to sustain us? Will the big toys be enough? Will that create the jobs to keep them in the lap of luxury? Will that create the jobs that we need? Cleaning up after them, wiping their snotty little behinds? Is that the kind of an economy we want? I don't think so. And in fact, I'm kind of tired of it already. What we need to be doing, we need to be building our infrastructure. And California, and you got to give the federal government credit, California is building this high-speed rail. And it's going to go from San Francisco to Los Angeles. In fact, the voters of California have approved nearly $10 billion in bonds for this, high-speed rail. The federal government has kicked in another $902 million in federal funding to get this advanced, high-design, state-of-the-art, high-speed rail running. And I got to tell you, this is exciting stuff, because this is the kind of stuff we should have been talking about doing all along. And our friends on the right, they don't want to do that. They want the free market. There's got to be a profit in it. Oh, we need to profit from it. It's like right here in this area. From the day I moved in, someone turned me on to the Corridor 1 project, where they said, you know what, they've got everything in place. They could put a light rail, would run from where I live out in Carlisle into Harrisburg, and they could run that rail to Lancaster and all over the place. You might even be able to tie it into the Amtrak, where you'd get to Philly and New York. There were a whole bunch of possibilities. And the county commissioners said, well, you know, it's too expensive. Nobody will come. So they didn't do it. No vision, no leadership. And I'm saying, you know, when I lived in Cleveland, they had an RTA Rapid. And it was, all the suburbs had a little spur, and it would funnel into downtown Cleveland. And I remember for the ball games, the Browns, the Indians, whatever, we'd take the train down. We'd hop on the Rapid, and we'd be down there in no time at all. No parking, no traffic, none of that. And it was, we just took the kids down this summer. We went down to see an Indians game. And I think it cost me, I think it was $9 round trip for four of us. So we parked out in the suburbs somewhere. We took the train in, because we parked out as far as we could to take, so the kids could ride the train a little longer. And we rode downtown. We walked across the street. We went to the ball game. We came back, jumped on the train, boom, out to our cars. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. That's the kind of investment we need to have all around this country. That's the kind of smart growth we need to have. You know, my wife and I talked about this a little bit earlier. One of the things Toomey wants to do away with is some of the programs that let those kids go overseas. Because heaven forbid, our pumped up, overly confident, egotistical children decide that they want to go see how the rest of the world lives. Heaven forbid about that. But my wife went over, and she lived in Spain and for a little while, and she got a Euro pass, one of these passes, and she hopped on trains, and she, because who wants to fight the traffic? Who wants to try and find parking? Who wants to do all that stuff? You sit on the train, you read a book. That's what we should be doing. And it's what we should have been doing all along. And that's what I said when this Recovery Act first started. The first thing I had hoped that they would do were massive building projects. But the Republicans conned the Obama people into tax cuts. And we saw what those tax cuts did. Nothing. Nothing at all. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You or a loved one suffer.
Same time as when we make a profit at the risk of other folks, it's not right. And we need to have those laws turned over, and we need to have some type of finance reform so at least we know where this money's coming from. And as it is today, Corbett is outspending Honorado right now 3-1. If you watch television, there's 3 Corbett ads for every one Honorado ad, and I've never heard of these people.
And to me, that's what's frightening, the fact that you don't know who they are, you don't know where the money's coming from, and they have an agenda. I look at Karl Rove, who said his American Crossroads group is out there trying to get Republicans elected. To me, that seems to run in the face of what the whole 527 thing was supposed to do.
It used to be that if the laborers union or wanted to run an ad, they had to tag it. Who knows? They have these great names, Rick, what's called Citizens for Responsible Government or Citizens for America. I mean, who are these folks? You can't find out now.
You know, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to convince you you don't need something, you'd better spend two to get it. And I look at all of these ads, and I think of him whenever I see that, because there are a lot of rich people spending a lot of money trying to convince me that Tom Corbett and Pat Toomey are the people that I should have in office. And I got to wonder about that.
You're absolutely correct. I've been in business a long time, and I only spend money. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. And I spend money to make money. Okay. I don't spend money just because I think it's a great program. Yep. I mean, I do. My wife and I, let me take that back. We give thousands away every year to charity, the food bank, the homeless shelters where your wife was at. We give thousands of dollars away yearly. But when it comes strictly a business model, we don't spend money unless it's for profit, and these people are spending billions of dollars to make tens of billions of dollars.
Now, I gotta be honest. Even the charitable deductions, even the charitable things that people do, I think is in a self-interest, because, you know, my mother always said, "As for the grace of God, there go I." You never know
Absolutely.
When you're going to need it, and we're seeing in this recession, we're seeing a lot of people who never thought they were going to need it, but they're thankful it's there.
Yeah, well, it'll get off track a little bit, but when I was the chairman of the board for the county commissioners, you would be surprised, folks, that come in who you thought had money, or maybe they did 5 years ago, who have been on hard times for 3 or 4 years and are hurting badly but are too proud to let anyone know. In fact, I'm one of the ones that I actually got criticized by my Republicans back home because the pay raise that I did not vote for that is given to us automatically, my wife and I for the last 4 years have given it to the food banks every month, every penny of it. And I was criticized for not putting it back into leadership accounts. And the reason I did that is that I believe the folks that need it deserve it. And there's nothing better than a food bank or a homeless shelter to be able to donate to.
Good on you. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I really like you, Scott. You're one of us, if you'll take that in a positive way.
I think I told you once before, my mother still lives in a mobile home and a mobile home park. My mother is eligible for PACE, NATU, or PACE care because my father never made more. He passed away just a couple of years ago. Never made more than $30,000 a year in his life. And if it wasn't for his $17,000 a year union pension, let me get it right, to combine between her Social Security and my father's pension, she makes $17,000 a year. And if it wasn't for that little bit of union pension and that, she wouldn't even be able to put food on the table today.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm way over time here, but, you know, I listened to the speech to the debate with Sestak and Toomey, and I learned something about Pat Toomey, that his father was actually a union member who put food on the table with union wages, and we're looking into it right now to see if he had a union pension. Because
I'm sure he did.
It's bizarre to me that this guy who benefited from this, the food went on the table in front of him, all the advantage that he had was because his father had a union job, now he turns his back on that.
It amazes me to hear that because folks, you know, I think you and I have talked about this before, that if you're in business and you want to make money, you have to make sure there's money in the hands of the middle class and lower poor,
yep,
and lower middle class and the poor, because they spend every penny they get because they have to. You do not stimulate an economy by giving millions of dollars to billionaires. It doesn't work that way. You stimulate an economy by the ground up and getting people to go. You may not like some of those big chain stores because they're against unions, but at the same time, they employ a lot of folks, and that stimulates the economy.
Yep. Let me give you the last word here. What are we going to see in the next week moving forward? What kind of positive things are we going to see out of the Honorado Conklin campaign?
We're running around, as I said, I'm in the West today, Pittsburgh, Allegheny, Beaver. I'm doing 6 events today. It'll be every day like this till the end. We're talking about the message that made us Democrats, jobs, 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 the economy, and get jobs again. And that's been our message since the beginning, and that's what we're going to end with, exactly what the core root and the values are of not just myself, but the Honorado.
And congratulations on the endorsements. I'm hoping more are coming, and I hope to get you back here before the election.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with your calls after this.
Waiting the flag. flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, your work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, Rick, at therickssmithshow.com. Our Borowitz report from Andy Borowitz, in a performance guaranteed to raise some eyebrows in Delaware and beyond, Tea Party candidate Christine O'Donnell said at a senatorial debate last night that she strongly supports the separation of speech and thought. To tell you the truth, I don't know that there's anything about the Constitution, she said, in the version of the Constitution that I read, Big Bird didn't mention it. Miss O'Donnell seemed stumped when the moderator asked whether there were any Supreme Court decisions she disagreed with, finally blurting out, Ollie Frazier? Her halting answers to many of the questions made some wonder why she had not written the answers on her hand, as her role model Sarah Palin has been known to do. But Miss O'Donnell offered this explanation. As you know, I believe it's immoral to use your hand to help yourself. Yeah. At the conclusion of the debate, Miss O'Donnell pronounced herself pleased with her performance, saying that she would spend the next week she's going as a qualified candidate. Elsewhere, the Texas Rangers advanced to the World Series, proving once again that when George W. Bush goes away, things do get better. Interesting. And I got to tell you, I love the Borowitz report. Good stuff over there. You know, while it's funny, while it's fun to poke at these clowns, it's fun to, you know, poke fun at them and their three-ring circus. You need to watch the serious ones. And there are some serious ones. And I look at this guy, this pastor, Stephen Brodin. He's a Texas Republican running for Congress. And he's one of these guys who's frequently on Beck's program. These guys who says really great things sometimes. You know, just get some attention. Like our friend O'Donnell. You know, do you believe, you know, do you think she really believes that there are scientists working in the back room, you know, putting together lima beans and corn and you know, a little gasoline, maybe some of this and some of that, trying to help mice have fully functional human brains? Do you think she really believes that? Or was it just one of those moments where, hey, I got to think of something stupid to say. I've got to be outrageous so that they'll call me back. Stupid people that keep sending me money so I don't have to actually work for a living. Because that's what I think it is. I don't think she's as... You know, it's fun to you know, make ha-ha of her, but the reality is she's figured out how to be 41 years old without ever really having a job. I'm the shuck in this. Really, I'm the idiot who got up and busted my back and my hip and my knees and my neck, and, you know, I'm 43 years old and falling apart. Why? Because I actually did manual labor for 20-plus years. But she somehow figured out how to sit on a set and make a living. And you know what? She must be the smart one in this. Because she's not the one that walks with a limp. And, you know, I sometimes wonder, you know? I sometimes wonder. You look at these crazy people. And really the dumb ones. But anyway, this past Stephen Brodin. And look, he doesn't have sense. So he needs to, you know, get some variety. He needs to get that outrage so that the crazy people send him money. And that's what it's about. I mean, you look at Sharon Angle out there in Nevada, who's getting, I think, another $3.5 million because she's nuts. At least that's my opinion in this. She's way out on the fringe, and the fringe keeps sending her money because they know she's pliable. She'll do whatever they want her to do. But this crazy guy, he was being interviewed on one of the television stations down there, and he said, if the government is not producing the results or has become destructive to the ends of our liberties, we have the right to get rid of that government and to get rid of them by any means necessary. Asked what he meant by it, he said, our nation was founded on violence. The option is on the table. I don't think we should ever remove anything from the table that relates to our freedoms and liberties. Even Glenn Beck has gone, dude, you're getting a little crazy here. Even Beck has said it's not somebody I can support. Because you have to understand, Beck has that nice act that he's going. He plays the revolutionary on TV, but he knows where the boundaries are. He knows where that line is. And he knows where the money is as well. But this guy, again, you've got some of these people, and these are the serious people. And I do make fun of Tea Party sometimes, but they're a very small number of really outrageous people sometimes. And you look at some of the things that have been going on, I laugh. How can I question what's been going on? A new Washington Post canvas. They canvassed hundreds of local Tea Party groups, and they've revealed sort of something interesting. A different sort of organization, they say, one that is not so much a movement as it is a desperate band of vaguely connected gatherings that do surprisingly little process. This is what I've been saying all along. These are a bunch of angry people who want somewhere to vent. They want somewhere to go and scream and holler and carry on. But they're not out there knocking on doors. They're not out there doing the canvassing, the hard work. Points out that 70% of the grassroots groups said they have not participated in any political campaigning this year. As a whole, right, they have no official candidate slate, have not rallied behind any particular national leader, have little money on hand, and remain ambivalent about their goals and political process in general. These are the Tea Party people who are not the Freedom Works groups or the Tea Party Patriot groups. And like me, this article, how many living, breathing people are actually involved in this? As opposed to the corporate people, of course. The findings suggest that the breadth of the Tea Party may be inflated. The Washington Post says the Atlanta-based Tea Party Patriots, for example, says they have listings of more than 20, but they were unable to verify many of them. They came up with 647. And just one guy, could be a couple of guys going, yeah, we got some members. the North Connecticut Patriots, they admit to 7 members. And I think the most honest guy in the whole thing was the guy who's the Southeast Wyoming Tea Party Patriot. He's all by himself. And what's interesting about the article is that they do point, I think people do need to take notice, a remarkable 8% of them, 86% of them, said most of their members are new to political activity. And I've been saying we need this kind of an awakening in this country. We need to get people shocked because, what do you have, in a midterm election, maybe 1 out of 5 people bother to show up? So they're saying that maybe these people can be participants years down the road. I don't think so. As I predicted, I think they're going to go back once Easy Street comes back, once they've got their bowl of Cheetos and American Idols on, I think they're going to go right back to and just simply fade away. But it's interesting. I really do believe there's an opportunity for labor in particular to reach out and say, this is the story, folks. This is it. It's our bizarre trade policy. We are the only ones who are playing by a set of rules on the global stage. I think you have the ability to reach some folks when you talk common sense kitchen table issues. And get away from all that other stuff. Look, abortion is never going to be decided. Away. It's not. Stop with the fantasy island stuff. It's not being overturned. Stop it. Gay marriage is coming, whether you like it or not. And I would think the conservatives would be in favor of it. Why? Because it's individual liberty. It's getting the government out of our lives. I think that's what you're supposed to be for. I don't care who you marry. Why should you care who somebody else marries? And to be honest, we heterosexuals have done it pretty bad of making a case that it's between one man and one woman. I mean, I look at somebody like Limbaugh, one man and then three different women. And Newt Gingrich, one man and three different women. Especially when his wife was on her deathbed. Here, honey, I got a present for you. Oh, it's divorce papers. How what? You were so thoughtful, Newtie. Quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
I'll be working as long as my two hands are to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working
men. Ugly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Michael is the big Wally of Walmart. As CEO of the low-wage behemoth, he siphons some $19 million a year in personal pay from the global retailer. How much is $19 million? Let's break it down in terms that Duke's own workforce can appreciate. His workers average about $9.50 an hour. Duke's pay comes out to $9,500 an hour. So he pockets as much in 2 hours as Walmart workers make in a whole year. But Walmart doesn't give a damn of such gross pay gaps between privileged elites and the rest of us. As a spokesman scoffed, I don't think Mike Duke needs me to defend his compensation package. Really? If not you, who? Those who think that the hoi polloi don't notice, much less care, owing income disparity, should take a survey run by the right-wing corporate-funded Peter Peterson Foundation. This out intended to show that the teabag agenda slashing government, including balancing the federal budget by putting city and Medicare on the chopping block. But, whoopsie-daisy, the survey of thousands of Americans went badly wrong for the Peterson ideologues. For example, far from wanting to gut Social Security, 85% of the people favored extending the program by making the rich pay into the fund, like all the rest of us do. And, hey, Mike, this one's for you. Nearly 6 out of 10 of the folks involved in the Foundation's America Speaks survey want a new, higher tax bracket to make millionaires pay their fair share of providing for the common good. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Foundation tried to bury these surprisingly progressive results, but you can see a good analysis of them at the Center for Economic Policy Research at cepr.net.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go With the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Our quote of the day comes from Ted Koppel. He says that people shouldn't expect the mass media to do investigative stories. That job belongs to the fringe media. So we shouldn't expect our media structure to investigate any stories. They're just the eye candy stuff. Just the blood and guts and the dumb stuff, right? Like Uniontown, Pennsylvania. Police say a southwestern Pennsylvania man faces charges of possessing a counterfeit control substance after he called them to complain about the quality of what he thought was marijuana. He called the police and said, you know what, I was just down the corner and, you know, I wanted to get me some smoke, and the guy sold me this stuff. So they tested it, and they found out, well, it's probably oregano, for all I know. It wasn't marijuana, but they said, you know what? You're still in a little bit of trouble. The charges have yet to be identified, but I think it's pretty funny. Also, same area. What's with Uniontown, Pennsylvania? The Herald Standard writes, a Pittsburgh man behind bars after he was hiding under a table inside a closed portion of a Uniontown bar, swilling alcohol from several bottles. Picture this for a second. You got this guy who broke in. He's just surrounded by booze. The cash register's open. Probably he's got a couple of bills sticking out of his pocket. Got a wild look in his eyes, and he's just guzzling down juice all around him. And these are the kind of people that we have to pay for to go to jail. I mean, really? Is this kind of stupid worth putting in jail? Worth $40,000 a year to lock up? I mean, think about it for a minute. We lock people up in jail for this kind of stupid stuff. Somebody should just smack them and made him pay for it. Anyway, let's go back to the Tea Party for a minute, because the serious part of this, again, is the money. And we're talking lots of money, loads of money, bushels full of bucks. The article reads, the AP, some European top polluters are funding the political campaigns of Tea Party candidates and others in the United States who deny global warming, according to a report by Climate Action Network Europe. The 12-page report is based on information recently published by the Open Secrets database. The European companies singled out as major polluters in the report are Lafarge, GDF Suez, E.ON, BP, BASF, Bayer, Solvay, and ArcelorMittal. It says, combined, these companies donated $107,200 to climate change deniers running for Senate seats. In addition, their total support for senators blocking climate change legislation in the U.S. is about $240,200, which is almost 80% of their total spending in the 2010 Senate races. By comparison, our friends, the Koch brothers, Koch Industries, a company that's helped the Tea Party people, has donated $217,000. And who are they? Who are they giving money to? Well, they're giving money to people like Inhofe. They're giving money to people like DeMint. All these folks who, as John Broder points out, skepticism and outright denial of global warming are among the article of faith of the Tea Party movement. All are wary of the Obama administration's plan to regulate carbon dioxide, a ubiquitous gas, which will require the expansion of government authority into nearly every corner of the economy. So foreign companies, let me get this straight. Foreign companies are giving money to Senate candidates who don't believe that we should regulate the emissions or have any regulatory environmental controls. And the Chamber of Commerce, who has said a number of times that, well, you know, we keep our money completely separate, even though we know, according to Think Progress, that they've spent almost $1 million of the Chamber's general fund on political ads. So the International Chamber of Commerce takes all this money in, and they're helping out. Doesn't it bother you that people like Republican Senator from Idaho, Mike Crapo, took $10,000? Does it matter that other recipients, Cornyn, Blunt, Hatch, Vitter, Grasso, Grassley, Lincoln, Landrum, Murkowski are all taking money? Does it matter? Matters to me. It matters to me that these foreign companies are having a say in our elections. And when I talked to the guy from the Chamber of Commerce a couple of days ago, his view was, well, you know, they're doing business right here in Pennsylvania. They're doing business right here in the U.S. Those aren't foreign companies. They're just right here in our local chambers, and everything's so wonderful. But you don't think that they've got a vested interest in how our laws are dictated? I do, and I think I've got a real problem with it. And I've got a real problem with corporations having this unlimited power to spend unlimited resource to fend off any sanity. Stop and think about this for a second. They've really got us by the short hairs. Because we depend on them. We've given them this power, saying that, okay, you're going to create jobs and we need employment and you know, you're going to do a little health care, pay a little tax, you know, all that stuff. In return, we're going to kind of, you know, ease up a little bit on you. But what they're doing now is they see an opportunity. They see an opportunity to take the reins completely off. They see an opportunity to be completely free of regulations and to turn this country really, and this is the goal, into a desperate economy where you have a desperation class. And, you know, you look at that story from 60 Minutes and you look at the faces of those people who, you know, at one time were probably some of the best Republican voters in town. They would have scoffed at donating to a food bank, let alone going to one themselves. And I see that here. I've seen people who, you, at the food bank, where you go, wow, you know, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're getting the help you need, but I would have never imagined. And maybe there is some stigma along with that. Maybe that's why we're never going to be able to fight back. Maybe that's why we're never going to be able to organize people who have lost their jobs for 2 years. Maybe that's why we're never going to be able to fight back, because of our pride. But I think there's strength in numbers. And if we could put that aside for just a little bit and say, look, I want a better future for my kids. I want a better tomorrow. You know, every day I wake up, and I wake up with the sole purpose of making their lives better. I wake up and I, every day, saying, you know what? I don't want those three kids that I've brought into this world to see the horrible crap that I've seen in my life. I don't want them to struggle as I have struggled throughout my life. I want them to have the advantage. I want them to have opportunity. And when I look at someone like Pat Toomey, who says, well, yeah, my father, he was one of those union guys. He's one of those guys. You know, he went to work every day. He worked his butt off, got paid a decent living, probably collecting a pension, probably most likely got health care. And all of that advantage that he got because of that, he forgets. Completely forgotten. And I hope my kids don't. I got to be honest. I hope my kids remember. Because I sure don't want them to struggle. I don't want anybody's kids to go hungry or to struggle. I guess that's the liberal side of me. I guess that's the side of me that wanted to listen when George Bush said he was a compassionate conservative. I guess that's the part of me when I heard, you know, George H.W. Bush talk about the 1,000 points of light and how wonderful full things were going to be. Or when Ronald Reagan said we were that shining city on the hill. For who, I ask? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Family values. are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. Right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, that's what's going to happen. People got to get fired up. People got to get angry. Got to get frustrated. Get out there and fight. This coming Tuesday, we're a week away. We are a week away from what I'm calling D-Day. We make the wrong decision. We are in big trouble. And I look at this guy who's running for Senate right here, Pat Toomey. He's kind of put himself between, a little bit of distance between him and the woman over there in Delaware who won't touch herself. By speaking against her idea that states should not be bound by the First Amendment's here's what she said. She goes, nothing I've ever spoken. She doesn't agree that the state shouldn't be able to establish a religion, which is kind of weird because isn't she supposed to be the Constitution person? Really, honestly, and truthfully, doesn't she love to talk about, oh, the Constitution? But she doesn't like the idea that states should not be bound by the First Amendment's prohibition. So when Toomey was asked about it, he said, well, you know, this is nothing that I've ever spoken about or agree with. You know, he's kind of just don't put me in with her. She's nuts. And here's what the T-Twits need to understand about Toomey. He's not religious crazy. He's money crazy. But he's not religious crazy. He's going to play the religion card because he knows that the minions will follow. But he's a money guy. That's what it's about. He's the guy who carries the buckets for the very wealthy. Like the guy in West Virginia. So let's seriously think about what we're doing Tuesday. The Washington Post reported that companies that received federal bailout money, including some that still owe money to the government, are giving generously to political candidates, with most of the donations going to, guess who? Republican candidates. And are you surprised? Honestly and truthfully, are you surprised? The same people who we helped, we the taxpayers, and this is, I guess, no good deed goes unpunished, if you will. That's the perfect way of, I guess, of putting it. That, you know, we give them a hand, say, hey, you know what? We understand. We're going to give you help. And then they turn around and they jab us. Well, they jab us. It's one of those things that just makes you go, we should have let them fail, but we couldn't. And we really couldn't. And I've had this conversation for the past couple of days with folks. We really could not let the banks fail. We couldn't let the auto industry fail because you need those jobs. You need that infrastructure. You know, had we allowed them to fail, what would have come out of it? Had we let the auto industry fail, what would have come out of it? What would have come out of it? We'd have lost millions of jobs that fed that industry. And beyond that, what we would have had is a scenario where we would have lost a major productive segment of our population. So that could not have happened. Couldn't have happened. Conservative groups, they are anonymously donating millions and millions of dollars. These wealthy donors, quote, are starting a carefully coordinated final push to deliver control of Congress to Republicans, shifting money among the 80 House races that they are monitoring daily. The effort is being led by a subset core of the largest outside conservative groups, which have millions of dollars left to spend on ads. And look, they're going to spend whatever it takes. They're going to spend every single penny, whatever it takes, to get people like Toomey and Corbett and Miller in Alaska and Angle in Nevada and Race in West Virginia and Johnson in Wisconsin. I mean, look at Johnson. There's a guy who uses prison labor, so he doesn't have to pay health care costs. Is this the kind of America we want? You look at the guy in New York, Palladino, who said, you know what, if they can't find jobs, screw them. Put them in the prison camps, let them work out of there. We'll even teach them some hygiene. They're going to spend whatever it takes. The very wealthy in this country know the opportunity is now. So they'll spend what it takes. And you look, like we talked about earlier about the natural gas industry, they're spending $1 million on Tom Corbett. $1 million. And so far, they've saved $100 million. Is it a good investment? Is it a good investment to pay a couple of bucks to a governor or a congressman or a senator so that they'll vote your way? This is why I think we need to get campaign finance law that has publicly funded elections and corporations are completely barred from participating. Sorry, you're not people. Until I can lock you in jail, you're not a person. That's it. And speaking of West Virginia, despite previously stating that he was for health care reform, that was passed by Congress, he signed into law by the president, was West Virginia's Democratic senatorial candidate Joe Manchin, now says he would have voted against it. He says, I am totally behind health care reform. Back in last year, what he said. Now he tells Fox News, I got some problems. I wouldn't have voted for it. And you know what the sad thing is? He's the good choice. He's the good choice. Doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside? Doesn't it? Britain's deputy minister, Nick Clegg, yesterday called for an inquiry into the trove of leaked U.S. military files from the Iraq war that document prisoner abuses by Iraqi forces, insurgents and sectarian violence and civilians shot at checkpoints by U.S. troops. Clegg said that the investigation of British misconduct is extremely serious and needs to be looked at. But, you know, we're not going to worry about that here. You know, they're actually going to look at it a little bit, probably not too deeply, but we've completely forgotten about it. We've forgotten all about Bush. We've forgotten all about the lies that got us into this mess. And what's funny, really, to me, is we're hearing conservatives now talking about, oh, this is Obama's war. And some of them are saying, well, we need to get out. We need to end Obama's war. I think that's hysterical. And what's even funnier is that there are people who listen to them that go, yeah, Obama's war. Look what he's done to our country with his war. I've actually got a friend who The true story. I mean, it just makes me laugh whenever I think about it. When Steele, when Michael Steele said that, it hit all of the talk shows. It hit all, morning to night, that's all you. So the next day I knew when I saw this guy, this friend of mine, that he was going to fall in line. And he did. You know, whenever there's a new slogan that comes out, whenever there's a new talking point that comes out, he knows the talking point, but he can't explain any deeper than that. And really, if you look at a lot of the Tea Party candidates, that's kind of how they are too. They can regurgitate the slogan, they can tell you the bumper sticker, but going down to that next level, not so swift. So he throws this out there that it's Obama's war, and I asked him. I said, "Well, when did we invade Afghanistan?" Well, when Obama took office, they sent those troops. Oh, you mean when they sent the additional 30,000 troops, the little surge idea that he had? Yeah, that's when it started. Really, it didn't happen after 9/11. There was nothing. No, we went into Iraq then. And I would laugh, and I would be sitting here laughing with you if it weren't so dangerous, if it weren't so pathetic that we've got people in the country who, because they heard it on the radio, they heard some right-wing talking head saying, Obama took us to war. It's his fault. That they buy it. Aren't you afraid of that? I know I am. And it's this revisionist history, you know, stuff we've been talking about on this program for the last couple of months, how they're rewriting the textbooks, how, you know, down in Texas, Phyllis Schlafly is in, Thomas Jefferson is out. How we learn about all of these, you know, Joe McCarthy was just misunderstood. Yeah, just misunderstood. My last story for the night, former Arkansas Gov. Mike Huckabee slammed former Bush advisor Karl Rove, and the elitism within the Republican establishment. On a radio program, Huckabee said Rove exudes a country club attitude and exploits grassroots activists' energy, but doesn't want them dining with us in the main dining room. And Huckleberry does? Does anybody remember Huckleberry leaving the governor trailer there in Arkansas? Does anybody remember him leaving the governor's trailer? As I remember it, back in 2006, he actually had a registry set up at Target and at Dillard department stores so that people could buy him some Lennox china and some bed sheets. Yeah, nice job, Huckleberry. We'll see you tomorrow night.
It's coming from the wind.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.